Hello world, welcome to the PocketGamer.biz podcast with me, Brian Baglow, and I'm joined this week by the editorial team. With us today, we have Craig Chappell, our head of content, and Daniel Griffiths, who is the editor. Hello chaps, welcome on board.
Hello again.
It has been a heck of a week, and Craig, you're looking very sort of jet set. I believe you've been off travelling and checking out some of the international stories of the week.
By jet set, Brian means I look tired, my hair's a bit rugged, and I don't look as smart as him. You can't see him. Brian's in a waistcoat, so just how I'm being shown up by everyone here.
So not quite as jet set. I just stepped off the train less than an hour ago back from Birmingham. I was at the UK Members Day. That's the UK Games Trade Organisation. And they had their annual event in Birmingham this year, looking at all sorts of regulatory issues, everything from loot boxes through to the new Digital Markets Act, which I believe we're going to be coming to. But yeah, you've got to keep it, you know, keep it smart. I don't like showing up in an old ragged Tomb Raider t-shirt. I had those times. I did a lot of GDCs looking like I had slept in a skip. So yeah, it's quite nice to dress it up. But my plan was not to appear in the three-piece suit. But yeah, given the times, this is what we've got. So we'll just have to deal with it. Try not to be intimidated.
Too late. In my hoodie. But yeah, no, so I guess we've all, a few of us were doing traveling then. So I've been in Turkey this week. I had a few things going on there. So I met up with the Rollic Games team. Shout out to them. Thanks for letting me into the office. It was really cool actually to see that. So a few interesting things in there, like on one of the walls, they have like a big television that just has live figures for downloads, lifetime downloads for the whole company. Mm-hmm. Daily active users, things like that. And then other cool things, like I spotted a gong, which I think is for like when they have a soft launch, they hit the gong. So here we go, we can spend money on this now, I guess. There's also a chess set. I challenged the CEO to a chess match, but we'll see. We'll see if that happens. But I'm addicted to it at the moment. I can't stop. I'm not very good, but I can't stop playing it. But while I was there, the next day we had 2.5 gamers event, which was really cool, refreshingly laid back, just like slagging each other off on stage, saying how boring they each other were, which I really enjoyed. And then the Think Games Istanbul summit from Deconstruction of Fun and Google the next day. That was great. Lots of networking opportunities. So yeah, great job there. And yeah, I had a lovely time in Istanbul.
I'm very jealous. I've never made it out to Turkey, and it's such a hot spot for games, casual gaming, mobile gaming. So I'm very jealous, and we'll have to take the whole editorial team out at some point, I'm sure. But before we kick off and start looking at the week's news, we have to remind listeners that we have a couple of shows coming up that you really want to consider being at. We've got Pocket Gamer Connects in San Francisco later this month on the 18th and 19th, which will be running alongside the Game Developer Conference, of course. And then in May, on the 1st and 2nd, we have the Dubai Game Expo Summit. So you can find all the details on pocketgamer.biz. Walk, don't run along there. Be safe, be careful. But pick up your tickets now because they are moving fast and we would love to see you there. Anyway, so having got that out of the way, let's have a look at this week's headlines and news stories. So, Craig, can you kick us off?
I don't want to steal the limelight from Daniel. We're going to kick off with DMA.
Yeah, let's get to the fun bit. This is you know, initially, you know, we have a bit at the end of this session where we pick one big story and talk about it. But to save this for the end of the podcast would be a crime, frankly. So we're going to talk about it first up front. The ongoing Apple versus Epic debate. Regular readers and listeners perhaps will know that I'm a bit of an Apple fanboy, so anything that's going on with them, I manage to keep them at arm's length. I don't embrace them fully, but anything Apple is always of great interest to me. Tim Sweeney versus Apple basically is the state of play. It's been an amazing week. We saw that Apple finally opened up iOS with 17.4, which is the first ever version of iOS, which is basically fragmenting the OS, so that there is now a Euro version and there is an American version. And it's all thanks to the Digital Markets Act in Europe, which Tim Sweeney played a small part in forcing through. And the fun stuff for me has been the fact that Apple have got away with doing so very little to adhere to the DMA, and managed to push through a whole bunch of fees and charges and conditions, which are basically the old Apple lockdown, closed walled garden in disguise, basically. But amazingly, they've managed to appease the European legal folks, and it isn't contrary to the DMA. So well done to them for getting that through at the start of the week. But then they went and spoiled it all. They just couldn't stop themselves from Apple's Phil Schiller basically sent Tim Sweeney a letter saying, "Are you going to behave yourself? Because we don't think that you are." And in really quite rude and brusque terms, they accused him of, "We think you're going to play an evil trick on us again, and we don't trust you at all. What do you think of that?" And Tim Sweeney wrote a very short and precise and perfect email back saying, "I will adhere to all of your rules and do whatever it is that you want, and I'm willing to discuss it any time." At which point, Apple banned them from being an iOS developer. It's amazing. Again. So they are no longer. I mean, Epic was saying, "We're really looking forward to being our app store, being back on iOS, bringing Fortnite back." Of course, the small matter of, you know, one of the world's biggest games coming back to iOS, and Apple have blown it. There is so much to read into it. One can only assume that we're getting half the story. When this happened, Tim Sweeney has you know, he's put it all out there. He's put the emails out there. He's put everything out there because he does love an uproar, it seems. And being a news site on the games industry, we love an uproar too. So we think it's great that we get to read and rummage through the dirty laundry. But it is fascinating. I can't quite believe that it's happened, and I can't wait to see what's going to happen next. But yeah, as of right now, Epic were an iOS developer, and then days later, they are not. And the result of this latest stink has been that they've roused the sleeping giant that is the EU legal folks, and they are now stepping up, as they should have done weeks earlier, and are basically questioning Apple right now as regards what it is that they think they're doing. Because basically, you can't have them adhering to the DMA and yet still be able to block whoever they like from developing on your platform. It's, yeah, fascinating. I could go on, but I won't. I don't know what you guys think, but it's madness out there, and I can't wait for round two.
I have so many thoughts. Like, but firstly, am I wrong? Like, so I missed a few things this week, I've been away. Like, the EU hasn't actually accepted Apple's new terms.
They've remained.
Right? I thought
they are silent on the matter, and the iOS 17.4 is out there, and is it exists, and Apple have not yet been told that they have not done enough, but everyone's waiting to see what the official ruling is. But until the EU say or do something, they got away with it.
I think that obviously I am no expert in the machinations of a big entity like the EU and the legal stuff that goes on there. So it sounds like, yes, Apple has perhaps adhered to the letter of the law, but the spirit of the law, arguably, I would say absolutely not, because they're basically trying to keep the status quo. Like, who will adopt these new terms? Who wants... Great, you get 17% revenue share, but now you've got a core technology fee. So you're charged 50 cents every download after a million in perpetuity every year. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. I think it's just the EU being slow
We'll see what happens.
I think we'll see
the,
more.
The scenario that is in play at the minute is and the Apple of Engineer is that everybody is sitting with a notepad and pen and working out whether it's worth the effort of going to all the bloody trouble to take advantage of this new DMA freedom, or whether they should get on with making and marketing games and just not bother. And Apple are, of course, hoping that by making it as hard and confusing as possible, that the majority of folks will just go, oh, I don't understand it. Let's just leave it.
Which is obviously not, surely that is not in the spirit of the law. You're not supposed to make it that difficult. You're supposed to open
up. The way
that
laws usually work is that there is a very precise line as to when you break them and when you don't. So this talk of, it's not exactly in the spirit of the DMA. It's like kind of like, well, are they breaking it or not? Because if they're not breaking it, they get away with it. It doesn't matter how.
But then if you break the spirit, again, I'm not a legal expert, so this is where it comes down, isn't it? If you break the spirit of it, like, there has to be some interpretation there to say, well, that's not what we wanted.
It's Apple.
But this is the whole point.
If they can get away with it, they will. And right now, they are. So
this is new legislation. It's just been brought in. It's coming in a single, albeit very large market. So it's not in Apple's interest to just say yes and roll over, because it's a bad look for the rest of the world. And because it's just coming in, by contesting it and exploring it and challenging it, the chances are that there might be interpretations that open up and give them a little bit of wiggle room. So don't expect this to go away anytime soon. I think they've got the time, the resources, the deep pockets to challenge this, fight this, fall back. And if at the end they're in the position where the everything within the law is enforceable as stated, then they've not lost anything. They've actually gained several months, and at least they've got clarity. But just shutting up and accepting it is not something that Apple, or I think any of the big tech companies, would do, you know, especially something so challenging to their former business model. So yeah, I expect to see this. But as you were saying, Daniel, I think at least we've got Tim Cook versus Epic, you know, to keep us amused while all of the terribly dry legal machinations.
I was going through it. The way that I almost feel like Apple's play on the thing that they're trying to do is they're trying to pin all this on Tim Sweeney and make it all Tim Sweeney's fault, in the hope that somehow Epic have a word with him and potentially oust him, but that's just never going to happen.
It's his company.
It's crazy. It's like kind of like, yeah, we've got a real problem with Tim Sweeney. It's like, okay, well, you know, they're never going to get rid of him. This is never going to end. It's like I put in the piece. It's like Warhammer. There is only war from now on forever. It's crazy. It's crazy.
We're just going to need a better, you know, a better title than Battle of the Tims. It doesn't really sound all that scary.
But yeah, you know,
I've got one final thing I want to say is that, like, I totally get what you were saying, Brian, that none of these platforms that the EU goes after for the DMA, including Apple, are going to take it sitting down. You know, they want to protect the money that they make. Like, I get it. But wouldn't it, rose-tinted, but like, wouldn't it be so much better if Apple took this and said, oh, okay, this is happening. Let's actually make the App Store good again. Let's like innovate on discovery there rather than just obliterating ways you could acquire users. But like, make the App Store useful for developers so they want to use it, so they don't go away. Like a company that innovates rather than, at the moment, to me, it seems like, at least with the App Store, it's the whole thing is run by lawyers. It's like, okay, right, well, what's the next thing that we can do to avoid this regulation from this country or this from this other country? So you've got this mess of rules, and the only innovation that they're doing is, oh, how do we adhere to the law whilst keeping the status quo, rather than let's make things better for developers. I think that's not.
Yeah, it's true. I like it. It's like Trump-style politics, where there's a nice and polite way of doing stuff, and then there's a big shouty baby way of doing stuff, and that's what's going on right now. They could roll over and make things nicer and better, but they don't have to, so they're never going to, frankly.
I think it's an interesting one. Yeah, it's an interesting one. And with all of the regulatory changes that are happening, it's the rest of the world are watching what happens with the Digital Markets Act. And so, again, it's in Apple's interests to test this, to fight this, to just keep things going. And I agree, it would be lovely if they went, okay, we recognize the value of the App Store. It's one of these very large platforms that are being defined in a lot of these new regulations. So you have therefore got a responsibility to do more to kind of, you know, make sure that it's a fair and equitable place. But yeah, it's, remember, they're looking at this from a global level. So this is very much a test case. I think they're going to get ready for the long haul. They're going to be looking at this as something that they'll fight every inch and concede, you know, poorly, but we'll probably get to where we need to be. And that's the point where they might go, okay, we need to change the App Store so that we can have, you know, something that works in the EU, America, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Don't hold your breath. Yeah, we'll see.
A fractured internet. That's in the future, it. I think.
Exactly. It's, as always, folks, watch this space. So, Craig, you have been looking at M&A activity across the mobile sector, I believe.
Yeah, so let's, I guess we've got more news that we'll quickly go through. So, yeah, starting with gaming M&A. So there was a report from Quantum Tech Partners showed that investment in M&A was down to $11.8 billion last year, the lowest figure since 2019. That was down 89% from 2022, which is ridiculous. But that was driven by, I guess, the announcements of these deals, because I think some of these didn't actually close that year. But obviously, Microsoft's $69 billion acquisition of Activision Blizzard and Take-Two's deal for Zynga. Mm-hmm. In 2023, not just the value, but the number of deals were also down. I think that was down 43% year over year. So nothing new there, I think. But yeah, M&A's down, obviously, because of things going on, I guess, to a degree, things going on in mobile, and the rest of the industry, and then wider economic factors, high inflation, high interest rates. So not a great time. I'll go into it later, but maybe not a great time this year necessarily either, but there is still money to be made. But we'll see how the year kind of goes ahead. Elsewhere, deals included Vibe.co, I guess, secured $22.5 million for their advertising platform. So that was a Series A round led by Singular, with Vibe aiming to become a new streaming TV ad network. And then a couple of other deals. We had the Collective Ace Group and By Aliens take on the world with latest acquisition, which is a headline I love. Game Development Publishing Hub. The Collective Ace Group has acquired the developer By Aliens, and the deal, I don't think there was a figure attached, but it adds 70 staff to the company's workforce, and it's projected to bring in an additional $15 million per year. So that sounds that sounds pretty good. And then, deals are happening. M&A deals are going ahead. And then industry veterans co-found Simply Sweet Games with plans to revolutionize the word game genre. So that's set up by...
Yeah, this excited me.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. Me. So that's set up by Tina Merry, a former senior development director at EA, and Karina Kohn, an ex-development manager at EA. And their first game is Crisscross Hatch, which has been described as a combination of Scrabble, crosswords, and roguelike. So I'm very intrigued to see what that looks like. They said they're going to reveal it at GDC. So I'm looking
something
forward
for
to learning more about that. Hopefully it sounds like something new. So that's really interesting.
That's cool.
That's a good one. You know, back in sort of 2010, I worked with the team at Denki in Dundee when they did a game called Quarrel. I don't know if you remember, but it was essentially Scrabble meets Risk.
Yes.
So you conquer territory by making words. I'm a big fan of a twist on a word game, so I will be watching that with interest. Daniel, What have you been looking at?
Newsy stuff that caught my eye this week. I've been speaking with Mattel, it seems, every day this week. Mattel have been dropping a big story every day about 5 o'clock. It's remarkable. Mattel are they are powered up and ready to go. They are getting heavily digital. As you know, they own all your famous brands from your childhood. Every single one of which is now having a digital presence. And yeah, blame Barbie. Barbie is on the way to probably as I speak. Is notching past $1.5 billion in direct takings from the Barbie movie, and the intention there is for them to become a games publisher, which is amazing. Actually, just as a side, I read something the other day that Margot Robbie herself, star of the Barbie movie, has personally made $50 million. Now I've yet to sort of drill down into the contract, but I'm guessing it was a reduction in salary up front for a cut of the profits. So well done, Hers.
Which is quite rare, yeah. I think. I mean, I've little knowledge of the movie industry. From what I know, that's quite
rare. It used to happen a lot, but these days people like the money up front. But I think she's been shrewd enough to I mean, it could have gone the way of Cats. Who knows? She could be skint. But no, she backed the right horse. So yeah, Barbie's flying high and Mattel have smartened themselves up. And are all set to go heavily digital. So we've got a new Barbie game. I think that was Monday's news. There's a new Thomas and Friends mobile game, which is a Tuesday. Master of the Universe coming to Stumble Guys. And then the PS2 Resistance is that they're going to publish their own games. So yeah, it feels like a no-brainer. So that's one of the popular stories on the site. But yeah, they are flying and set to get even bigger. In a loose Mattel connection, Monopoly. Monopoly, of course, being owned by Hasbro, but Hasbro has its Mattel connections too. Monopoly Go. This is one. It's from the Think Games Istanbul event that Craig was at the other day. I was interested in the talk by Scopely's marketing SVP, Jamie Berger, where the pointed question was leveled at him right up front, and that's the is Monopoly Go actually making any money? A fascinating topic, because the idea that it might not be making money seems absurd. But the costs of user acquisition are so high these days, and the game appears to be flying so high and doing so well that the suspicions were that they were actually spending more than they were acquiring. Mr. Berger put the record straight. He said that when a game is making $800 million a quarter, then they can afford to invest heavily in user acquisition. I believe him. I believe that it is making money. And he was very keen to put the rumors to bed. They're very happy. Scopely are very happy with how Monopoly Go is going. It seems daft that I have to say that. It seems daft that Mr. Berger had to point that out to everyone. But yeah, it's flying high and they're very happy with it.
I love the story just runs and runs. Every week they have to say something about it.
It is. I mean, he did a really great job on stage of explaining why it's a success. And the short version of that is it's a brand that everyone knows and loves. And they took away all the boring bits that exist with the board game and turned it into a mobile game. So it's got everything that you like about Monopoly with none of the throwing the board around and getting bored and walking off before it's finished and stealing from the bank when no one's looking. It hasn't got any of those things. It's just the good bits, and you get to play it with your friends whenever you want, for however long you want. You know, like a Monopoly game in real life, it's like, you know, you can commit weeks to it. So it's like being able to dip in whenever you want, play with your friends wherever they are. It's great.
That's an epic game of Monopoly you're playing. There's usually like a falling out before that happens.
I've got memories of it running, you know, where you end up with these two superpowers with hotels on around the Mayfair corner.
Yes.
And it just goes round and round, wait for somebody to land on it. Yeah, you don't get that in Monopoly Go, thank God.
It's by far my least favourite board game, because it is terminal.
When Jamie Berger says,
you know,
he actually said, well, it's a brand everyone knows and everyone loves. I was like, well, you know, I mean, everyone knows it.
It's a game everyone does play.
Yeah.
And then there's like half the family that likes it. And then the other half is like, all right, I'll play it. And then by the end of it, you're all like, all right, well, we're all going home now.
About 5 years ago,
I can't believe you did that to me.
Monopoly, the board game, because I didn't have one in the house. You know, just to, what's it like? We played it a couple of times. And I was like, oh yeah, it all comes back to me now. But yeah, Monopoly Go is all the good bits, and none of the bad bits. And speaking of big games, Candy Crush Solitaire has soft launched in Canada. This is an intriguing one because, again, everyone loves Solitaire. There's enough of a twist in this version of Solitaire, based on the Tri-Peaks version created by Robert Hogue in 1989. But it's sufficiently different, yet strangely familiar. And, of course, it's got the Candy Crush branding on it. So, yeah, expect that. Expect global dominance to follow and expect it to roll out internationally shortly. And more big game stuff. Eggy Party. Eggy Party is doing amazingly well. 500 million players in under 2 years. And NetEase revenue is up 9.4% to 11.5 billion in 2023 with Eggy Party playing a big part in that. Not bad for a Stumble Guys clone, which is in itself a clone of Fall Guys. What goes around comes around. I think, you know, hats off to the people when there's a winning formula, you know, go ahead and copy it because it does seem to work. It did make me laugh when, going back to Jamie Berger again, the Scopely chap, he was talking about how easy it was that they found to convert Stumble Guys for console. And it made me smile because it's like, yeah, because it's based on Fall Guys, which is already on console. But that's another story. Also, got to say, Fall Guys, great name for a video game, and brings back lots of Lee Majors memories for me. Stumble Guys, not so much.
Yes,
you know, but they're making their millions, so as long as they're happy. Speaking of which, final one for me. Honkai Star Rail, its revenue doubled in a month, and Genshin Impact slips back. But I just wanted to massive respect for Genshin. It's still there. It's still rolling along. The idea that the same company can have these two apparently rival games, and one doesn't immediately kill the others, I think it's a lesson that a lot of folks need to, you know, they can learn. They are doing it right. This is how you do it. They are a new game and an old game, one beautifully cross-fading into the other, and both of them making millions. So yeah, congratulations to them, and long may it continue.
What I would say to that, though, I haven't looked at this particular chart, is that fantastic, like, really like a leader in the mobile game space, but no denials here, and, you know, kind of innovating quite a lot there. But it does seem that one cannibalizes the other. So when one does well, the other one doesn't do as well, and then vice versa. I think, again, that's what we're kind of seeing here, probably.
As a games fan, you know, I admire the noble pursuit of extending your game's lifespan and making sure that you keep developing it and it keeps evolving and you keep your audience happy. But as a games fan, I do like it when something brand new comes out. So the fact that they have potentially, you know, killed one game by birthing another, you know, some people would have said that was madness, but I think they've by having two games coining it in, I think they've doubled their money rather than trying to extend the lifespan of the other. So it might not work for everyone, but it's working for them.
And it's so rare that you see mobile games developer really actually release two, another hugely successful game like that. A lot of the time they get stuck on one, and it's only really a select few that are able to release multiple massive hits. So yeah, well done to them. I think it still cannibalizes it, to be honest, but still well done.
I think they're doing the crossfade just right. It's working.
Well, this is the thing. If you're losing people from your game, if they're going to one of your other games, and you're potentially bouncing back and forward between the two, then at least you're keeping them in. What was it? The not the UU verse, Miho verse. So yeah, if you can do it and do it well, more power to them.
Yeah, they've had like a few different names. Miho Yoho Universe. I think Cognosphere was one. Might be making that up.
Oh, good.
They've had a lot.
Not to worry, not to worry. Moving swiftly on, Craig, back to you.
Yeah, we're going go back and forth with a few news. I'll go through these ones quick. So we got Supersonic verges on 5 billion downloads in its first 4 years. So I think this is Iron Sources Games publisher, which technically now is Unity's. The team's worked on hyper casual titles like Bridge Race, Going Balls, and Tall Man Run. So well done to them on a really huge milestone. Another hyper casual company, and they also do other platforms. Other than mobile, so Quali has launched a new mobile publishing platform called Hitseeker. That provides a suite of tools, analytics, and they get expert support to optimize the development process and help games find success in the mobile market. And then I just wanted to very quickly touch upon, there was as EA elaborated a little bit on their new mobile or on their new company strategy. So the headline was, EA's new mobile strategy focuses around significant library of owned IP, which they did touch upon last week, stepping back a bit from a lot of licenses, trying to move forward with their own. While announcing that, they laid off 5% of staff. We were questioning last week, you know, what does that really mean for mobile? And I was like, maybe this is kind of partly reaction to some things going on in the mobile space. And then they've said now, over the past 6 months, they've merged their mobile and HD franchises under singular leadership across EA Sports, Madden, and The Sims. Meanwhile, they're shutting down a lot of this we already knew. Kim Kardashian Hollywood, Tap Sports Baseball, F1 Mobile, and they also said they're shutting down their Lord of the Rings game, which I always forget existed. I just feel like it wasn't marketed. And then I think they made a little bit of comment about their standalone mobile business, and I think they're gearing that up for success, whatever that means. They've got Plants vs. Zombies 3 on the go, but then they've also cancelled already Apex Legends Mobile and Battlefield Mobile, which is their own IP, admittedly with a development partner, though. Maybe they're just bringing things in-house there. I don't. It's still very unclear what the strategy is and how they'll make the most of Glue. And again, one of those things we'll just see over the next year. But I'm curious how that develops. But
I love this strategy that they are so big that they don't need to rely on licenses because they've got their own things. I'm waiting for them to invent a new sport, a new spin on football with 3 goals on a triangular pitch or something, and they can completely own that.
They need to get in touch with is it Dan Marshall, indie developer, the Kickmen, I think was his game. He knows nothing about football. Made a PC game a while back, and which was just like his interpretation of what football could be.
We were allowed to use your hands.
It's hilarious.
You know, that's
probably it is like that kind of game. It
football
is
with
like
guns.
A parody kind of a football, but like, if you didn't know the rules of football, how would you think it's played?
Brilliant.
Oh, well, I think we should just sit back and wait for them to buy Mattel.
One day, who knows? One day. We'll see. Something I've been keeping an eye on is unfortunately the ongoing layoff situation in games. I'd like to say, and you know, I can confidently say that it does seem to be easing off slightly. January seemed was very harsh. February, not quite so much, but things are slowing down. We got 505 Games downsized their operations and closed offices in Spain, France, and Germany. It's all something that they said that they were going to do last November, so that's 30% of the workforce down. But the saddest part of that was the quote is that they find that consumers are increasingly returning to established IPs and spending more time in those games rather than wanting to go with new stuff. And as I said earlier, I love it when somebody releases something new and original and great and people get on board with it. So it's always a little sad to see original games getting passed over for the same old. And the other one that caught my eye was Wildlife Studios lays off 133. I always think of Wildlife as flying high, and it's easy to forget how massive they are. They've got 60 games out there, 3 billion downloads to date. Things like Bite Race, Tennis Clash, of course.
Wow.
Sniper 3D. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, when successful games companies like that with a huge portfolio and a huge audience, when they're cutting staff, it's always a little bit curious and a little bit shaky. But I'm glad to say, on the whole, the number of I'm touching wood literally right now, the number of layoffs and contraction going on is reducing, and is certainly down in Feb than it was in Jan. Well, let's see how March goes, but fingers crossed we're over the worst of it.
Well, let's keep those fingers crossed, people. We can do without any more layoffs in the news next week, which brings us very neatly onto the Week in View section. So, Craig, what's been happening?
So I wanted to cover a really good session from Deke Structural Funds, Eric Kress, and Mishka Katkov. I did a roundup of their talk, which was they did an audit of their last year's predictions, which they said they got, like, I think pretty much all but one right. And then they kind of looked at the current state and their predictions for the future. So the TLDR was, digital markets app will make Apple bleed. AI begins to transform ways of working. User acquisition recovers. Apps overtake games in IAPs. The investment crunch continues. And the lean times drag on. So I'm going to go over a bunch of these fairly quickly. So we already discussed the DMA already earlier. Eric Kress, his thoughts were very interesting. He certainly thinks Apple is going to suffer at the hands of the DMA. He called out the EU changes that Apple has made as clearly unacceptable. He said the DMA was likely not to be trifled with, like it's regulation with teeth. And then he said the EU will go medieval on Apple about this. I think that's pretty true. I think it will take time. Obviously, this could run on for years. But, you know, Apple has already set out its stall in time with the DMA, with Spotify, a 1.8 billion euro fine, I think it was. That was like a record fine, but to do with music streaming, but some of the same kind of issues that we're talking about, which is anti-steering. So they're not, I think they've set out this sort of, not, we're not taking prisoners, and I think they will come back to Apple about this. And like you said earlier, Daniel, in particular because of the whole Epic situation. I don't know what happened there in terms of Epic getting its account back. And then Apple going, actually, no, we're taking it away just because it's crazy behavior. There must have been an internal miscommunication there, or they just, they changed their minds. User acquisition is stabilizing. So put it down to Facebook, AppLovin, and Google have largely adjusted to the privacy changes from app tracking transparency. And so now we're actually seeing signs of recovery in the mobile market. He was using US data. He had an interesting chart that charts kind of US revenue and year-on-year growth and declines. And you can actually see in the chart when IDFA deprecation began, in very short order, you could see yearly declines start. And then now, I think the last two quarters, we're kind of seeing some growth again, which is great news, right? Obviously, the it's not great that you have to kind of deal with these privacy changes, and I could keep going into the privacy stuff about how much I think is actually about that or not. I think a lot of people have had that discussion, but at least companies are adapting, and as always, publishers, the whole ecosystem always has to find new ways forward to trends or rule changes like this. So hopefully that continues. And who knows, maybe by the end of the year, we'll actually see some growth. The other point, apps overtake games on spending. This was a thing that we actually, when I was at Sensor Tower, it was kind of a trend that was going on. And I've seen it in other reports, like Data AI, for example. And I think this is true. I think people are spending a lot more time on those apps. It doesn't mean games growth stops, for that reason. Mm-hmm. You can still have a growing games market, but you also have a growing non-gaming. I think there's two factors. One, people are spending more time on things like TikTok, YouTube, which is what was mentioned in the talk by Mishka. But I think actually the apps are also doing a better job of generating revenue, either through subscriptions, which non-gamers kind of led the way with, or just other means to make money. Like, yeah. I think TikTok has a lot of like tipping content creators. So I think the revenue growth there is not just because everyone's leaving games and going to non-gaming. It's because they're just getting better at monetizing, which games did a long time ago. So hopefully we'll see growth between the two. And then just quickly, one of the things I'll touch upon was the investment crunch continues. So Eric said it was going to be a slog for VC. I spoke with Gen Capital at the event, Think Games, and I think they were saying that it's sort of the middle grounds where VCs maybe won't invest much. So I think, if I remember right, I'll correct this in the article next week. I think it was at the early stage. Yeah, maybe you'll get some VC funding. And actually, like, once you've got a game's proven and it's doing well, then you can actually gain money there. So you can get investment there. And it's between that, it might be a bit of a struggle. Although, interestingly, Eric Kress was just like, separate from that conversation, but he was like, maybe those bigger deals don't make much sense for VCs because actually they're looking for 10x returns. And mm-hmm. So, for example, Marvel Snap developer Second Dinner raised $100 million, I think, VC capital. Amazing game, amazing studio. Believe they could do even more great things. But I guess the 10x return there means you've got to start making billions of dollars for that to be worth it for those investors. So I could kind of see the point there. It'd be interesting to see how that all evolves. And AI, what we said, AI begins to transform ways of working. So there are a lot of examples of what you could now do with, I guess, graphics and in development, like practical uses now emerging for AI, generative AI tools. And one of the key points was, in the not too distant future, I think what Mishka was saying, that you kind of need, if you've got skills in using those generative AI tools, you'll be a much more valuable employee than the employees that don't have those skills. Obviously, that's put into a very general, broad description, so not necessarily applicable to everyone. But I hate to say it, but because I've not really been learning these tools, to be honest. But because for writing, I don't think they're fantastic. But I think he's not wrong there. Like, these tools are coming; they're going to get better. So you should really, if you can find ways to do your work quicker and better, you do become more valuable as an employee, right? And maybe your work gets better. We'll see how that all shakes out. But anyway, that's quite broad. There's a lot of topics there, but I just wanted to go into a bit of detail on what I thought was a really interesting session at the show.
There's a lot in there. And yeah, unpacking the whole, you know, the evolution of AI is something I suspect is going to be coming up in episodes all the way through 2024 and beyond. But touching on that value in markets, Daniel, you were looking into salaries. You were following the InnoGames.
Yeah, yeah. Just to wrap up, last thing, I'll keep it pretty short. This is, personally, I always found this sort of stuff fascinating. InnoGames revealed all their staff salaries in the spirit of openness and being a very right-on company, all part of the Equal Pay Day that took place on March the 6th in Germany. I think it's brilliant when a company does this. It's fantastic. They reveal their salaries so that everybody can see what they're paying and they can be inspired to do the same. The amount of people and companies that do reveal their staff salaries, they don't necessarily follow one-to-one, should we say. Everybody, I admire what it is that they're trying to do, but really all they're doing is everyone pounces on it just to double check that they're being paid enough. Fantastic. The good news is that InnoGames do seem to have some pretty good competitive salaries out there. So a junior QA engineer starting at 38,000 to 50,000 euros. That sounds pretty good. Junior developer, 48,000 euros to 58,000 euros. Yeah, fantastic. I wonder how much trouble they're causing within the industry by publishing salaries rather than the good. I wonder how many managers' doors got kicked in the following day with people holding up a Pocket Gamer dot biz on a laptop and pointing to our feature. I don't know, but yeah, it just I love it when somebody is honest and transparent and lets us into their world. So yeah, it was great. You know, and it's a good topic for discussion. I remember there was a company that let their employees set their own salary. And they were the subject of a BBC documentary a few years ago. And the amazing fact was that everybody thought that they deserved a pay rise. Was the end of that the end of that brilliant experiment.
That is odd.
But speaking of pay rises, yeah, if you can get them, good luck to you. Go out and get it. I'm not quite sure whether now is quite the time to be storming into your boss's office saying, "Come on, where's the money?" But Capcom. Have done that for you. So if you work for Capcom, they are currently investing in their own people with pay rises for all employees. So yeah, I want to close out with them. Well done, Capcom. Some good news for once. So yeah, everyone deserves a pay rise. Good luck, everyone, in getting it. So yeah, all the best.
I always think that it's difficult. It's always a difficult conversation. Money is because it's very personal, and so sometimes I think when it's discussed. If it's not a company policy, but people start discussing their salaries, it can create some sort of friction. But I can see that some countries, I think this is actually mandatory now that you have to share company salaries. And I think it became apparent in a lot of sectors that actually you kind of have to publish this stuff because of the gender gap, really, basically. People not being paid equally for the same work. So yeah, interesting that this gets published, and hopefully it has a good impact on the industry, especially the local sector there.
Yeah.
Yeah, well done to them. I hope everyone at the company is happy that this has happened, and that they're all getting paid for what they should be getting paid based on this.
I just think, you know, yeah, I can't believe that Nigel's getting that. Nigel is absolutely useless. You know, the conversations within those walls, I'd love to be there.
Now, you see, I'm listening to this, and what you guys perhaps don't know is the last two podcast episodes that Peggy and I did, we spoke to several members of the Enneo Games team. And they're obviously started and run out of Copenhagen in Denmark. So they have a very, very different way of looking at this. And we all know that the Danes are, you know, one of the happiest nations on earth, far more sort of focused on quality of life.
And Games is in Germany.
It's, well, the people we spoke to were in Copenhagen.
Amazing. I didn't know the spread. Yeah. Co-ops in your... Yeah.
and to go back to one of the earlier stories, they've got games out there like Forge of Empires, which you know, has been running for 20 plus years and is still going. So, you know, it's a very, very different approach, a very, very different group of people. But the last couple of podcasts with Peggy and I, we spoke to a lot of their team behind some of the older games, and then their amazing marketing manager, who's now talking about narrative marketing, which is something that she's really kind of pushing. So a really fascinating bunch. But I strongly suspect, from what we were told about the company, it's that kind of open and inclusive culture that they're really trying to sort of spread out across all of their locations. So yeah, I've got a funny feeling this will have been done in consultation with the employees rather than, by the way, folks, we've just put this out. So yeah, the very best of luck to them. I do hope they're happy, and I suspect they are. And our good old fashioned British cynicism is more of a reflection on us than it is on them.
Enough. Get yourself over to Germany and have a word with Inner Games. They're paying some good salaries. Let me tell you.
Fantastic. Well, I think, unless there's anything else, gentlemen, that brings us to the end of this week's festivities.
Indeed.
Yeah, I'm gonna go to bed after I've edited this. Long week, yeah. Very good week, but a long week.
Take it easy. Yes, it's Friday. Friday already.
Well, that's it. Folks, thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you for joining us. If you enjoy what we're doing, please leave us a like and a review on whatever podcast app you are using. Every review helps. And any feedback, anything you would like to hear us discuss, anything you think we should know about, please get in touch. The email address is podcast@pocketgamer.biz. And until the next time, we're going to wish you a fond farewell and have a great weekend.